activity. The surface of the concrete, already pitting and seamed by age and by the shifting of the earth beyond, had begun to show a different texture, larger holes accentuated by the shadows from the overhead lighting. Ryan had never actually seen Swiss cheeses with their smooth holes, but he'd occasionally come across pictures of them in the brittle old mags that still littered the wrecked malls of Deathlands. That was what the walls of the redoubt corridor were starting to resemble. Ryan stopped, knowing that a combination of speed and silence was his best hope to get past without disturbing the lurkers within the walls. A yard ahead of him, the brittle stone exploded in a burst of powdery shards. Most men would have stood still for a frozen second of time, shocked into immobility. Such men would have died. Before the second round slashed past him, gouging another crater from the concrete, Ryan was in motion, his combat-honed mind racing like a comp in overdrive. The blaster was an M16A5, the sound unmistakable, despite the distorting effects of the rounded walls. That meant it was Coburn, the rangy sec boss of the late and unlamented Baron Nelson. Coburn was a tall and laconic man with the face of a boxer, someone Ryan could have befriended in another place and at another time. But he was also a man who had taken his lord's salt and now saw his task as to hunt down his lord's killers, Cawdor and his friends. All of that raced through Ryan's mind, even while he was still diving sideways, dropping the panga, his fingers grasping for the familiar butt of the Sig Sauer. From what he'd seen of Rick Coburn, his guess was that the sec boss had come alone, made the infinitely dangerous climb in the blinding snow, figuring that was what Ryan would have done, skirting the sheltered plateau where Christy and JB and the others were waiting. With a rifle, Coburn had a notional advantage, but the poor lighting and the disorienting curve to the passage had saved Ryan's life. He flattened himself against the wall, his automatic drawn and ready. The sweep of the corridor was deserted.
Nice try, Rick, but you don't win the golden apple.
They used to say Jupigal in the old detective films, Cawdor. Seems like a standoff.
Yeah.
How do you want to play, Cawdor?
Any way you like, but better make it fast. It's colder than a whore's conscience in here. So we do this with knives?
You're just full of tricks like that one, Ryan.
What?
Ryan was grinning, despite the razored tension of the moment, wishing that there was some better way out of this confrontation, knowing that there wasn't.
I got me a 7-inch blade that I used to slice my ham. You got that big sticker that you used to butcher the fucking pig.
Count three and both step out and start blasting?
No, Ryan. Don't care much for that one either. I like tech vids, not cowboys. None of this gunfight at high noon shit, thanks. Try again.
Hand to hand?
Do you trust me?
I believe I do.
I believe I trust you too, Ryan. No blasters and no steel. That it?
Why not?
Out of the corner of his eye, Ryan could see slow, roiling movement in the shadows of the wall.
Now?
Why not?
Ryan eased a little away from the wall, opening up another few yards of the long corridor. His blaster was still cocked and ready. Ryan might have said that he trusted Coburn, but that was because he couldn't see any other quick way out of the impasse. If there was an opportunity to gun down the sec boss without too much risk, then Ryan was going to take it. Survival wasn't some sort of role-playing game.
Come on.
Coburn appeared, holding the M16A5 at the hip, his fingers snug inside the trigger guard.
We both put the guns down on the floor, slow and easy. We step away from them, we lay down the knives, then we get to it. How's that sound?
Not as good as sitting together for a talk and a drink, but right now it'll have to do.
The rifle and the automatic hit the icy concrete at the same moment. Both men stood and looked at each other, less than 30 paces apart.
Meet you halfway?
Sure.
Ryan tried to calculate at which point he could turn and make a dive for his blaster, figuring from what he'd seen of Rick Coburn that there wouldn't be too much in it. Not enough to bet his life on. Every nerve was stretched for the tall, lean figure to spin around and grab at the old rifle. But Coburn second-guessed him. Instead of going for the gun, Coburn suddenly dug in and powered his way toward Ryan, his arms pumping, closing the distance in a moment, sparks flying from the steel-tipped heels of his boots. It was a good move, taking Ryan by surprise. The men fought with frightening intensity. There were flurries of clawing, kicking, and punching. Ryan succeeded in snapping the little finger on Coburn's left hand, and nearly got in a killing blow to the front of the throat with the heel of his hand. But the sec boss parried it with his right forearm, and they broke apart for a few seconds. Ryan was in the center of the corridor, flexing the big hamstring muscle at the rear of his left thigh, where Coburn had managed to numb it.
You're a son of a bitch, Carter! Knew it wasn't a good idea. I'm real sorry about this.
What?
This!
Coburn pulled a small over-and-under derringer from beneath his jacket. Ryan had been about to draw the slender-bladed knife from his own belt to kill Coburn, and there was a certain grim humor in the realization that for once, someone had been faster and meaner than he.
Is there anything we can talk about?
Not a thing.
What about the others, Rick?
The sec boss was leaning casually against the wall, his breath hissing between his teeth as he glanced at his crooked little finger.
That hurts like a real bastard, Ryan. The others? Christy, Doc, and the kid?
All of them.
No, stop inching for your knife. Keep real still, Ryan. This holds a pair of 44s. It's useless above 20 feet, but we're closer than that.
Again, Ryan noticed a slight blur of movement from one of the myriad holes above the sec boss's head.
You let the rest of them go?
Hell, why not? This blood feud's between you and me. You got my word on it. No harm will come to them.
Like I had your word on no blasters?
Yeah. Life's a bitch, and then you die. Real sorry. Want to turn around?
No. I want to see it coming.
Of course. So long, Carter.
The muzzles were like miniature railroad tunnels aimed at Ryan's eye. Coburn held the gun, granite steady. The white worms boiled from the pitted walls all around him, like an eruption of death. The gunshots must have disturbed them and also scared them for a while. Then, sensing no great threat, the nest of worms came out to feed. When Dean had been attacked by the malevolent creatures, there had seemed to be dozens of them. Now there were hundreds, vomiting from every crack and crevice in the walls over a length of 20 paces, all of them making for Coburn. Ryan froze, close to his discarded blaster and the Ponga, but not daring to make any movement that might draw their attention to him, as he watched helplessly. The worms seemed to have layers of teeth within teeth, set in circular, needled jaws. Once they'd fastened onto the man's flesh, they burrowed into him, just as they'd excavated the solid walls of the redoubt. Their bodies thrashed to and fro, making Coburn look as though he were covered in a shroud of white cords. Several of the blanched creatures had struck at his face, one delving, as Ryan watched in horrified stillness, directly into his left eye socket. Two more wriggled between Coburn's lips. A fine spray of blood dappled the struggling figure, like a ruby mist. The only wonder was that the sec boss had the physical strength to keep on his feet for as long as he did. But less than a minute had slithered by, since his finger had begun to squeeze the trigger of the derringer. Finally, like a slab of meat dropping from an iron hook, Rick Coburn fell to the floor of the passage. The worms seemed to sense the moment of death, and they instantly became less frantic in their attack. With the slowest of motions, Ryan stooped and picked up his blaster, sliding it into its greased holster, taking the Ponga in his right hand, wiping the film of sweat from his palm before gripping it tightly. Now the thrashing had ceased, and Ryan realized, to his gut-churning disgust, that he could actually hear the worms at their feeding. Already, most of the dead man's clothes had gone, along with much of his skin. In places, between the feeding creatures, Ryan could actually glimpse the ivory white of stripped bone. He took a deep breath and steadied himself. Still more of the worms were emerging from the rotten concrete farther along the passage, crawling down the walls and along the ice-frosted floor toward the fresh meal.
Go!
Ryan sprinted past the charnel feast, jumping to avoid a few of the creatures as they struck at his boots. But his speed carried him through, away from the treacherous corridor walls, past the entrance to the Matrans unit and toward the controls of the main sectors. It was one of the smallest redoubts that Ryan had ever visited. The military complexes had been established in conditions of great secrecy during the last few years of the 20th century, mostly, but not entirely, in areas of natural solitude. Though Ryan had encountered urban redoubts, as well as at least two outside of the old United States. Many had been stripped in the panic conditions that existed once the accidental new Holocaust had been triggered, early in the 21st century. but some had held caches of food or supplies or armaments that had been helpful to Ryan's group. This small Colorado redoubt had been stripped, containing only a few metal-framed beds and miles of empty shelving. From the scant